Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to episode 174 of Rogue Startups. Mr. Craig, how are you doing this week?
Man, I'm good. It is Friday night and I'm podcasting with you, Dave. That's the extent of my social life these days, I guess, that this is what Friday night looks like for me. So,
well, I'm both honored and a little scared that I'm your best social option on a Friday night.
Yep.
Yes. Kid life. Hashtag kid life.
That's right. That's right.
I know all about this. Well, yeah, it's been a weird couple of weeks for me because we haven't really talked about any updates for a little while here. But for those of you that didn't know or aren't in the U.S., there was a school shooting almost two weeks ago at this point at my daughter's school. It was a STEM school in Highlands Ranch, Colorado. And that has really sort of colored everything that's happened in the last couple of weeks. I mean, how can it not, right?
Yeah, no.
I mean, it's just been super, super weird. You know, first of all, there is absolutely nothing as a father, let me just tell you, that ever prepares you for the phrase, "Dad, there's a lockdown at my school and I heard gunshots." You know, when your daughter texts that to you, that is so disconcerting. And for hours, I had no idea about the safety of both of my daughters. It turns out that, you know, both of them were fine. Nobody was hurt physically. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, there's been lasting traumatic effects. And we're going to all of these things with various parents and kids and vigils and things at the school. And the whole schedule's been turned upside down. And now they have, like, this really shortened school day for both of them, where there's like 20 minute long classes, and yeah, they're like,
is that just to get the kids back into going to school kind of mode, or is there another
reason for that? So, I mean, as I understand it, you know, this is kind of sad, right? But because they've had experience in other previous school shootings, the counselors and other people want to get the kids back in as soon as possible to kind of put some closure on things and to help start the healing process, which I can see that you put them together in the room and the kids are, you know, you see them brighten up. A lot of them are like happy to see their friends and be around that, especially. So I've got it from two different perspectives. I got it from my 9-year-old and I've got it from my 14-year-old. My middle daughter was not at STEM, thankfully, so we didn't have all three of them there, but you know, that's an entirely different situation. And so with my 9-year-old, it's like there are some things that she's kind of picked up on and some things that are disturbing to her. But for the most part, she's been kind of happy-go-lucky. And some of her friends are like that and some of them aren't. Some of them were more affected and some of them were less affected. And it's very interesting to see how individual kids react to this sort of thing. And with my older daughter, you know, she's kind of been all over the place in how she processes this. She's very much like me in that she's good in a crisis and kind of can compartmentalize and deal with the things that are at hand in the crisis and not worry about the emotional baggage until later.
Afterwards, but then it's like a freight train though, right?
But then it hits you like a freight train and you don't really know exactly when it's going to hit. And, you know, we're still working through that. And with some of her friends, you know, we had to take them both to school on different days to go pick up their belongings because during this lockdown, they basically were like, okay, you leave everything behind. It's all evidence. Get out of here.
Wow, really?
They had to walk the kids out, you know, with their hands above their head, on their head, with the police. Yeah, I mean, it's just some
sad is. Okay, I'm sorry. That's completely unnecessary, right? Like,
Well, it is and it isn't because, you know, they don't really know who's involved at this point. You know, it's weird because they're doing this.
It's a long day to march them out like military, like camp style, just enforces the trauma that just happened, right? Like, there are so many bad things about this, but.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of bad things about this, but, you know, this is what happened. And so we're dealing with all the fallout and trauma and everything of this. So like our whole schedule's been turned upside down for a while. After school activities were off the you know, off the docket, and now they're kind of coming back, and like my daughter and I do martial arts together, and now she's like, no, I don't really want to do that right now, Dad. And I'm like, okay, I get it. Yeah, this is this is bad. So it's like our whole life just got turned upside down and dumped on the ground, and we're kind of trying to pick it all up. So like business wise, this last 2 weeks, I have literally done fuck all. I have done the absolute bare minimum to keep things running, and I've done a piss poor job at that, because I'm getting things from, like, you know, my customer support people and developers, and they're like, hey Dave, we're kind of waiting on you on this. And I'm like,
well, I'll pay you to wait then. That's the privilege I have of being a business owner. It's my decision, right?
Yeah, it is. But you know, it doesn't make me feel any less bad about the whole thing here. Yeah. It's just, so I'm still processing and dealing with all of that. Oh God.
I mean, I get a little bit of the notion of trying to get back to life as normal as soon as possible, because it tries to like put your mind at ease that you are going to go back to school. You are going to start your extracurricular activities. You are, as a parent, are going to go back to work, and your kids are going to be okay and all that kind of stuff. You got to have the time for processing and the structure around it, which sounds like they've done a good job of like setting up things for everybody. I mean, how many kids at the school, Dave?
There were over 1,800 kids at the school.
Oh, geez. That includes
elementary, middle school, and high school.
Elementary?
We have K through 12 at this school. And yeah, I mean, my daughter was in elementary. She's in fourth grade. And yeah, I mean, you can imagine that this scared the holy living crap out of the little kids. And for a long time, you know, a lot of them, it's funny, some of them were saying to their parents, I didn't realize that this was a drill, you know, and they were sitting around for 2 hours. They were just like, wow, this is really long, you know?
Yeah.
But the middle school and the high school kids figured it out very quickly, obviously.
That
kind of adds to the fear. Whereas now the other ones have realized that wasn't a drill anymore. And so now they're freaked out. I'm sure that they're going to be freaked out like the first time that they run a fire drill or any kind of a thing here. Just weird stuff triggers them right now.
I mean, I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry that happened to you, that your kids are having to go through this and process. I mean, it's something that no one in the world should ever have to go through, but much less a kid, and much less the young kids that don't know how to process anything emotionally, much less like a threat to their life, and like seeing other friends react in this kind of visceral way that I'm sure some of them did and stuff. Like, that's just...
Yeah. I mean, I could go off on a whole political rant about, you know, this is all about, but just, yeah. I mean, to have your kids go through this, you know, if you're out in the audience and you're a parent, hug your kids tonight and tell them that you love them, because there's, you know, there's a chance if you send them to school that something like this could happen. I was honestly naive enough to believe that this particular school was probably the least likely one in the area, and it turned out it was the one. So, you know, whatever assumptions that you have about school shootings and where your kids are going to school, it can happen. It can happen anywhere at any time. And, you know, I'm so grateful and thankful that our kids came home safe and in one piece, because not everybody's kids did that. You know, there's one kid that had died in this thing, and 8 others that got injured. It was scary as hell.
I have to say, this is a big fear of mine's, but even more so my wife's, is like guns just in general, not necessarily at school. I mean, where we lived in New Orleans was a pretty safe place for New Orleans, but still like shootings at gas stations and stuff like that, like next to the school where our kids went to preschool and stuff, like totally bizarre. I have to say, like, as an American, you are raised with this shit on the news all the time. But man, like, it doesn't exist here. Like, there are not guns and there are not shootings. And like, I mean, if this kind of stuff really concerns you, get the hell out of the country, because there's a lot of places in the world where that is not normal and is not acceptable and it doesn't happen. We have a whole lot of things that suck about France. There's a lot of really great things. There's a lot of things that suck, but this is not one of them. And so I would say, like, well, to Dave, maybe come on over here, or to anybody else, like, you don't have to accept this as normal, like, because it is not normal. And for you, Dave, to think that, like, oh, if I send my kids to this science, technology, engineering, and math school, STEM, like, they're going to be safe, totally get you. And I would have been the same way, like, private schools or whatever, probably safer than other places. But, like, you still don't have to take that as, like, acceptable, you know, because it's not.
You're absolutely right. You are 100% right. This should never be acceptable in any place in the world. And yeah, I mean, that, like I said, I could go off on a whole political rant on this, on how the parents of these kids were blatantly irresponsible by not locking up the weapons that they had, and why they let their kids have access to those. And for any reason, for any length of time, makes zero sense. But, you know, most of these school shootings, I heard a stat the other day, 67% of them got them from their parents. So, you know, we have a big gun problem here in the United States. And
I'll go off on the rant for you, Dave. What's the Second Amendment, right? The right to bear arms, right? Is from the Revolutionary War, which is what, Dave? 1800s?
1776.
Okay, right. When the gun was the biggest and best, baddest thing that you could have against someone else, and it would defend your whole country, right? Like, if you had a gun, you could, you know, whatever, defeat the British, right? Now, in 2019, it is not that, it does not have that purpose anymore. And so for people, civilians, to have guns is just fucking stupid. So, and I don't care if we lose podcast listeners over this, no one that's not in the military should have a gun, because if you didn't have guns, then shit like what happened to you, Dave, would not happen.
I totally agree. 118,000% agree.
It's insane. In France, you can have a gun and it has to stay locked at a like hunting camp, and you can only use it there.
That doesn't seem unreasonable to me at all. If you're a hunter,
you have a gun for to go hunting. Oh, there you go. You're going to go hunting at the hunting camp. Voila.
I mean, common sense gun laws have been completely hijacked here in the United States, thanks to the gun lobby. So,
it's insane. Yeah.
Well, on that bright note, let's talk about something more more applicable to the podcast audience than going off on our own political leanings.
The thing I had to talk about today is also extremely political. But
well, good. All right. Well, let's just kill the rest of the podcast audience while we're at it here. That's good.
But has a hopefully a very positive aspect to it, or shine to it. So I talked about this at FemtoConf. Benedict and Christoph were kind enough to give me a few minutes to talk to the, you know, the audience of like 25 people or something like that about something that I'm starting that has to do with climate change and the impact that we all have on the environment and creation of, like, you know, pollutants and things that are creating greenhouse gases. So I am launching a site called Sustainable Startups. So it's sustainablestartups.co. If you want to go check it out. And the idea here is for us to build a community of carbon neutral startups. And the inspiration for this came from a blog post by the hunter.io folks. Do you know Hunter, like the email lookup tool?
Yeah. In fact, I've used it.
Yep. So Hunter is a French company, and they wrote a really cool blog post on Medium about how they purchased carbon offsets for their entire business. So they had a calculator, like the really cool Excel spreadsheet or Google spreadsheet. They talked about, like, servers and flights and people and offices and all this kind of stuff. And they calculated, you know, the tons of carbon that they created a year as a company. And they're a pretty decent sized company. And then they went and bought carbon offsets for it, actually, like, for the last 3 years or something. And for them, they're a team of like 6 or 7 people. And for all 3 years they've been in business, it was about $1,000 for them to buy carbon offsets for, like, as long as they've been a business. So I was like, this is really cool. And we got to do something about this, because, like, we're seeing here in France, like, some really firsthand, like, evidence of climate change. And when I was in the US a month ago, they have this thing. I don't know if it made the news out where you are, Dave. It's called Red Tide. Did you, like,
this? No, I didn't see algae that in the local news over here. I know what Red Tide is, but I didn't know that there was something recent going on.
Yeah. So anyway, this is a huge tangent, but red tide is this algae bloom in the ocean, like in coastal areas, that kills all of the fish and all of the marine life, right? And so the whole like southern half of the state of Florida had this algae bloom for basically all of last summer. And it wasn't until a hurricane came in, cooled the water down and blew, you know, just turbulated the water so much that it killed this algae bloom out, but it has decimated the economy in a lot of these tourist areas. And it only happens when the water is really warm. And so it was like the longest in history by a long shot. And they're fearful that if it comes back this year, like some of these coastal areas will be just totally decimated in terms of their economy, not to mention the wildlife and stuff. Well, so anyways, yeah. Well, that's kind of a tangent. So I read this blog post by the Hunter.io folks. And I was like, we got to like get something around this. And then the model of like the Baremetrics open startups thing came into my head, like a community of people showing what they're doing around, in Baremetrics case, like their business. But what sustainable startups is a community of businesses that have pledged to offset their carbon footprint by buying carbon offsets. And it's really easy and it's really cheap. And if you go to sustainablestartups.co, we have a carbon calculator and we have information about where you can buy carbon offsets at a bunch of different like marketplaces that, you know, have these ecologically like additive aspects to them. We bought our offsets for Castos and it was like $250 for the past year because we're a small business. So our goal with this is really just to increase awareness with respect to like how easy it is to become a carbon neutral business and how to calculate it, because that's kind of a hard thing. But we have like a calculator that's specific to really software and online businesses. Like, how many servers do you have? How many people do you have? Are they remote? How much do you travel? Basically, like that's all that we do. You know, not many of us like make stuff. So I think that's where it gets harder to measure your carbon impact. But this is something I'm really excited about and interested in, and am hoping that folks that listen will go check it out and share it with everyone they know, because this shit is really real. I mean, it's as real as what you were talking about with the terrible stuff your kids and your family went through. And this affects everybody. And to think that it doesn't, or it's not coming, or it doesn't affect you or something is really silly. So I think that it's cool that we as online businesses and like smart with it people can like say, okay, I can do something that's really not that hard or expensive to offset the impact we have and create some awareness around it. Hopefully kind of starts to make a dent in the stuff we're doing to the planet.
Yeah, that's super cool. At one point, I remember I did this because I was doing a lot of travel. I don't do quite as much as I used to, but it was still a fair amount. And I went and did carbon offset calculations for one flight. And it's huge. It's unbelievably huge. So that, you know, airlines are one of the greatest contributors just because of the sheer power of the engines that they're using and how much they're flying. And even, you know, if you're on a plane of 300 people, your carbon offset for that one flight is still way higher than you think. So it's pretty scary.
Yeah,
to look at those numbers and see what kind of an impact you really have on the planet. So yes, we'll put that in the show notes, I assume.
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So check it out. Check it out in the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's cool. I mean, it's I've been talking to some of the people at FemtoConf about it, and I think that it's something that will. I hope it's something that will really get some steam and get people talking and thinking about it at least. Hopefully they go spend the few dollars to kind of offset the impact that they're having. But at least, you know, talking and thinking about it, because yeah, I mean, I think it's if you look at any of the statistics that don't come from the Trump administration, the shit that we're in is serious and it's not getting better anytime soon. So,
well, that's for sure. Sticking our heads in the sand isn't gonna improve it. That's for sure.
Yep. Yep.
So on a non-politic front, how are things going with Castos and Podcast Motor?
Things are good, man. Things are good. We're really on both fronts. We're exploring some paid acquisition avenues. I've been playing around with combinations of Quora, Facebook ads, and Google ads, and kind of experimenting and getting to know the platforms a little bit for both businesses. And I think the reason is you kind of realize that, like, we've been doing content marketing, especially on the Castos front, for a long time. We did a lot for Podcast Motor at the beginning, and that's cool. And you can write a lot of blog posts, and they're impactful and stuff like that. But to scale growth, I think anyone would tell you that, like, just doing content is not going to cut it. And so finding a way to acquire customers in a way that you have a lot of control over, like ads, is something that most companies will need to figure out at some point. And I think that's kind of the realization I came to, is like, content is the, is still going to be the cornerstone of our marketing plan. And we're going to be using ads to enhance it and get the word out to more people faster and in a better way, maybe. But content is still going to be the thing that, like, we drive people back to, and it's going to be the top of funnel experience for a lot of people. But yeah, I mean, we're trying to figure out, you know, at what stage in the customer journey we use what ad platforms and for what purposes, and what, you know, how we can figure out based on, like, the growth trajectory we want to go at, kind of doing the math backwards. It's like, okay, we want to add whatever, 100 customers this month. We need to get 1,000 new trials, or 5,000 or 10,000 new trial or visitors to the website, and 2% of them are going to convert to trials, and 50% of those are going to, you know, all this math. So we have a pretty cool spreadsheet we're keeping track of all this in now, to try and, like, keep track of what we're doing, but also to do the math backwards to say, if we want to grow at 10%, we need to be doing these, you know, that's the end result, but we need to be doing all these things kind of upstream or up funnel, to drive those. And organic, you know, word of mouth or even referrals, I feel like, is not, you can't impact it quickly. You can impact it, I think, and, you know, things like affiliates and referrals and blog posts and social media, and we're podcasting, of course, all that stuff is, like, really good. And I think it should be, like, the base of what you do. But I think if you want to add to that, then obviously, like, paid acquisition and, you know, promoting your blog content and stuff like that has to come in. So we're working on that, and that'll be the focus for a while, really, of, like, how we're adding to our marketing.
Cool. So I have two comments about that. One, I don't think I shared this article with you earlier this when I came across it, or maybe it was last year. It's all kind of a blur. It had to do with somebody talking about the thing that's going to move the needle for content marketing. I think I got it from Growth Hackers. And they were talking about the dimension of originality. So everybody always talks about, okay, well, you got to build skyscraper content, or you got to build 10X content. And everybody's been doing that. But the problem is everybody kind of just copies everybody else. So if you find an article that already exists out there, and the example I think that was used was Neil Patel's SEO stuff. If you just take and replicate what Neil Patel has done and create another skyscraper article or a 10X content that does exactly what Neil did, you're not really going to get any traction out of that, because Neil's already done it and he's ranking for it. Mm-hmm. So why would Google pick you over him?
Yep.
And the dimension that this thing was talking about is that you need to kind of object, you need to inject originality into this here. You got to take a new perspective on it. So sometimes that's a contrarian position, and sometimes it's actually doing the other stuff where it doesn't exist, where the skyscraper or 10X content doesn't exist. And that's hard these days. That's really bloody hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that I think is going to be the tough part to make it scale. So as long as you guys can figure out a way to set that, I think you've got some good traction there. The other comment that I was going to make is the reverse engineering of your funnel. Isn't that really fucking scary?
Yeah. I mean, the volume of, like, the difference of where we are and where we need to be on the, like, the top end of the funnel is immense.
Yeah. I mean, I did that with Recapture in the early days, trying to figure out what would it take to get me to growth. And then all of a sudden you take this general nebulous thing of saying, all right, I want to do 10% a month growth. And you reverse engineer that to say, all right, 10% growth means I need to close this many people, and I need to have this many trials because of my conversion rate to get that many people. And then in order to go from visitor to trial, I need this many people. And then all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, I got to have 10,000 people come through here? What the hell went wrong? And nothing went wrong. It's math. That's what makes this scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, you know, I think that sort of tempers your outlook on growth there. It's like, if you have to get 10,000 people in to close and get 10% growth in a month, maybe something's either wrong with your channel, your growth strategy, or your pricing, or something. Like, you got to figure out what's wrong with your setup there. And that's why I like that approach. So I'm glad you guys are taking that. It's quite scary to do the math on that instead of just saying, I'm going to grow 10%.
Right, right. No, I mean, it is, because, you know, I think you can hope, right, that you're going to grow 10% and just, quote, work hard, right? But I think if you don't know, one, where you stand today in the whole funnel, then you have no chance of figuring out what you need to do at any of those points along the way. And the top of the funnel is the easiest one. But like, we have another metric we're looking at that like really sucks. You know, like a lot of our SaaS metrics are really good, but we have one that really sucks. So what if we could double or triple it? Then you need a lot less up at the top. So maybe the traffic we're getting now is good. If we can fix this other thing, you know, we would be doing, you know, 10 or 15% a month. So,
right. To quote Mike Tabor from one of his MicroConf talks, hope is not a strategy.
No.
You can't just do that. And I mean, I've done it. I said, oh man, I really want to, I just hope we're going to get this growth this year. And, you know, I try various things, but you don't, when you think of it that way, it just never really works out. You've got to have some concrete strategies to say, all right, this is my goal. The goal is this. And then here's how I'm going to get there with the following things. And here's some math that tells me, here's what's got to happen for that to work out. Because if I can't get to that, then there are problems and I have to fix those problems. So that's a much more methodical approach. I don't want to say scientific, because really there's nothing scientific about any of this. It's all, well, I guess you could say it's scientific because you're doing experiments and then you're finding out, did my experiment work or not? And if it did, then double down on that or find out what I can do better. And if it didn't, then try to fix what's broken.
Yeah. I mean, it's frustrating. You know, it reminds me of is, it's kind of not long after we got married, my wife put us on a budget. She's a very budget type of person, and I'm very much not. Like, I'm a very we'll just figure it out kind of person. And it's hard and it's uncomfortable and it's weird to know like where you stand in the financial world. But if you don't, then there's no chance of getting to, you know, the promised land or wherever, you know, and from a personal finance standpoint, to be saving money every month, from a business standpoint, to be growing and profitable and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, I think that even just knowing where you stand is a huge step. And like, we've had this spreadsheet for a couple months now. And so I know, like, yeah, a lot of our metrics are really, really great. And we have one that just blows. And so we got to work on that one. And so that's cool. It makes it all really easy. Instead of, I want to grow at 10%, it's, we need to affect this one thing. Like, that makes it really tangible. Scientific is a good word, because like, yeah, we're going to go do a bunch of things to this one piece of the business and see if it works.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love it. I love it. Yeah.
But you're right on about the content stuff, man. I mean, we are writing a lot of really good long content and it's paying off for sure. Like, our traffic is definitely going up. But I am hopefully not naive enough to think that it is the only way that we'll grow, because it's just hard and competitive, even in the podcasting space, which I don't think there's like a ton written about. Like, if you're in like marketing automation or like the Neil Patel types of worlds or SEO, it would just be impossible, I think, to only rank on content. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I would not want to be trying to do content marketing in those worlds. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And the one I was first exposed to when content marketing was going big was the stuff that Help Scout and Groove were doing. And when I was trying to do Support Vine, I was sitting there thinking to myself, well, how am I going to get my game up to theirs? Cause they're getting all this attention based on the fact they had this great content and these great stories and I had nothing. And the truth is, you know, they just beat me to it. You know, if I had been at a different stage, I could have probably executed on that and had some, you know, funding and customers, and I could have hired, you know, Gregory Chiatti or Len Markitian or any of those guys that were doing, you know, were just dedicated to writing this content on there, and they put out some pretty incredible stuff. So yeah, I mean, some of that's timing, some of that's luck, and the rest of it is just you doing the hard work of research. So yeah, I hope that works out, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. How are things with Recapture?
Slow and steady, like I said. You know, some of the, I was looking at the growth from last month, and I'm seeing some churn this month from some of the people that just signed up and then activated without really thinking about it. And now I'm looking at their accounts after 14, 15 days, and they didn't renew to speak of. So you can't recover more than zero when they only have zero to start with. So that kind of sucks. So I got to figure out what's going on with my onboarding that makes them want to do that. It was good that they kind of jumped into there, but you know, that I feel like I kind of fell down, and you know, I need to really segment my customers really into two buckets: those that are ready and those that are aren't quite there. Mm-hmm. And I need to have a different way to handle the ones that are not quite there, but I'm not really sure what that looks like at this point.
I know you get information from Shopify when someone installs, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Can you send even just like a Boolean, like they're ready or they're not, like a zero or one value to drip to say like, send them this campaign or send them that campaign based on revenue or something?
Well, yes, I can. The question is the ready flag. So what happens when we do the install, after the install, there's this asynchronous process that's going in the background and it's pulling their past orders in Shopify. And we go back a year so that we can actually show them customer lifetime value data. And in order for us to calculate even 30 days of good customer lifetime value data, we really need a pretty deep history to get to that. So it takes like 24, 48 hours to kind of chunk through that. And so sometimes we see like their past 30 days of revenue, like right away, if they have a very small history. And sometimes we don't. Like sometimes it can take a day to catch up or longer. And so I don't necessarily know in the first few emails, you know, because by the time I get to day three, they've probably already picked up three or four emails from me. And at that point, I just am starting to get an inkling as to whether they might be a good fit or not. And sometimes it could throw it off a little bit. For an example, they might have a test store, and that test store is really representative of a store that's making six figures a month. And I don't really know that. So I might misclassify them as something else, because sometimes they'll just do a development store because they're migrating over from Magento and they're just working on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, that's a little bit pathological. I mean, I could probably figure this out. The question is, how do I try to handle them differently? So what I end up doing right now is not ideal, but when they get to the end of the trial and they haven't converted, the ones that are obviously below the revenue threshold that I'm looking for, I'm like, okay, yeah, this didn't work out. I should probably try to find a way to follow up with them, but sometimes they just uninstall and move on. Like there are people that, you know, install the app and 6 minutes later, they're like, yeah, we're done. And, you know, I don't know what to do with people like that. I'm pretty sure that there isn't anything to do with people like that. I think they either know what they want or they're looking for something very specific and I don't have it.
Yep.
Or they just, you know, don't like the pricing. I've had a couple of people come back and say, yeah, you know, I found something that does it cheaper. Okay, great. That's fine.
Right. You don't want those people.
I don't want those people. Yeah. That's a different mindset that I'm looking for. I want somebody who's more concerned about, you know, how can you help me grow my store and do a good job at it? So that's, you know, that's hard to figure out with just magical Boolean flags in there.
Yeah.
In the onboarding process. But when I get to the end and there was somebody that was clearly a good fit and either they didn't convert or they uninstalled, I try to reach out to them. But, you know, by then it's a little late, because if they've uninstalled, they've probably mentally moved on, not just physically. Mm-hmm. And they're probably somewhere else, like they're looking at a different app or they're just done with it. So trying to pull them in at that point is tougher. So I've got some work to do on that. But yeah, I mean, I haven't had the headspace to really
put
that into practice this week here. Yeah. That's for sure. But that's been bugging me in the back of my mind, watching the growth from last month and the churn that's happened this month.
It sounds like really impactful stuff though. I mean, if you could figure that out, that like segmenting those people and sending the you know, the right message at the right time kind of thing.
If only there was software for that.
Yeah, it could be pretty interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, a part of it's like, well, for me to really get the thing that really kind of bugs me about Recapture is that the guy that originally wrote it, he did all of the front end and the app all together in Node and HTML5 and CSS with a little bit of React thrown there. The front end is mostly just raw HTML. So for me to do website stuff, I had to code the whole damn page from scratch, which is good and bad. I can use some page templates for a lot of stuff, but some stuff I can't. And, you know, in some ways I kind of wish I was just WordPress where I could drop in some stuff a lot faster. And I've been sitting here thinking to myself, man, I should just migrate this. And then when I start to migrate and I'm like, oh my God, this is a pain in the ass. Is this really the best use of my time right now? And
is this so I just haven't gotten there. For moving the business forward. Yeah.
And I keep coming back to, no, it's not. So I do something else and, you know, like more integrations or the onboarding sequence stuff. Yeah.
Yep.
Stuck there.
No, I mean, I think it's real. It's a struggle, I think, for all of us every day. It's like, what's the most important thing, right? No matter where you are in the journey or anything, it's like, that's always a question.
Yes. Yeah. No, you should be asking yourself that every day. And if you're not, then you're probably spending time on stuff that might not be as important as you think it is. That's for sure.
Yeah. Cat videos. That's really
I love those cat videos. No, actually, I can't stand the cat videos.
Cool. I think that wraps us up for today. If you have any questions, shoot us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com. And a shameless plug, if you're interested in sustainable startups and want to be listed as a sustainable startup, we're going to have like portfolio pages for every company that kind of has pledged to show their carbon neutrality. Just go to sustainablestartups.co and you can either go ahead and join or just drop your email and we'll get in touch with you to guide you through the process. But thanks everybody for listening and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.